April 29, 1986, Lawton, Oklahoma. A 50-year-old housewife is killed in a flaming car crash, which is initially ruled to be an accident. However, her husband uncovers strange evidence suggesting that her death might be something far more sinister. After that, the trail went cold. Everyone, and welcome to the debut episode of The Trail Went Cold, a brand new podcast which will be tackling cold cases and seemingly unsolvable mysteries. I am your host, Robin Warder, and if you are a regular reader of Cracked.com or ListFirst.com, you might recognize my name because between the two websites, I have published over 100 articles. I have done a lot of pop culture and film-related articles at Cracked, but I have also written some true crime and mystery stuff for them. One of the most popular articles at Cracked was The 6 Creepiest Unexplained Phone Calls, which was published in Halloween 2014 and thus far has over 3 million views. However, the majority of the articles I write for ListFirst.com are crime and mystery related because those are the subjects which are most popular with ListFirst readerships. So I have published a lot of articles about those topics there and wound up researching and covering a lot of mysteries and cold cases. And that's exactly what I want to do here on The Trail Went Cold. There are a lot of great true crime and mystery podcasts out there, but I want to cover cases which ordinarily don't get put into the spotlight. I want to cover some of the more obscure ones. But before I get started, I just want to give a special thanks to McGill Foote, who has edited together and assembled this podcast for me. Gil and I are co-owners of a pop culture website called The Back Row, and we have been recording our own personal podcast called Shouts from the Back Row for over 5.5 years now, and this is my first foray into a true crime and mystery podcast, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I also want to give a shout out to Vince Nitro, who composed the awesome creepy music for this episode. So with all that out of the way, let's begin. I hope you enjoy this. Now, the first mystery I will be covering today, it's pretty obscure, but it actually got put into the spotlight on national television nearly 30 years ago on an episode of a TV show you've probably heard of called Unsolved Mysteries. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'd wager that you probably agree that Unsolved Mysteries was one of the most awesome shows in the history of television. Unfortunately, Unsolved Mystery segments are pretty hard to find these days if you're trying to watch them online. There used to be hundreds of segments of Unsolved Mysteries available for viewing on YouTube, but around 3 years ago, their production company, Cosgrove and Muir Productions, just decided to take them all down, and if anyone tries to post them again or upload them back to YouTube, Cosgrove Muir immediately pounces on them and gets them taken down. I would have loved to have done a video analysis of today's case and used some Unsolved Mysteries footage, but this is a much safer way of doing this. There's no risk of being pulled because of copyright infringement if I just do it in podcast format. So enough about that. Let's start talking about the case in question. The case I'm going to be talking about originally aired on Unsolved Mysteries on November 29th, 1987, and it's pretty notable because it also happens to be the very first episode that was ever hosted by Robert Stack. A lot of you out there might not know, but Unsolved Mysteries actually started off as a series of specials on NBC before they turned it into a full-time TV series, and they initially tried giving the hosting duties on the earliest episodes to Raymond Burr, and then they tried it on Carl Malden. But needless to say, once they gave Robert Stack the reins and were exposed to his awesomeness, they never went back, and he became the full-time host forevermore. Because needless to say, the show just wouldn't have been the same without him, and after he went on board, Unsolved Mysteries became a full-time series and wound up airing for the next 15 years or so. And the case I'm covering today, I actually consider it to be my personal favorite Unsolved Mysteries segment, and the reason for that is because it's so damn baffling. It is one of the strangest mysteries I have ever encountered, but before I get started, I should mention that the only source I am using to analyze this story is the original Unsolved Mysteries segment, along with the show's official website, which has a profile about this case. Because try as I might, I could just not find any other information about this case online. No articles from the media, no old newspaper clippings in Google News, nothing. Like, this is an Unsolved Mysteries exclusive case, but I believe this mystery is so compelling and so complex that, in spite of the limited resources, I believe it's worth analyzing anyway. So, let's begin! The name of the victim in this case is Aileen Conway, a 50-year-old housewife from the town of Lawton, Oklahoma. She lived there with her husband, Pat Conway, whom she'd been married to for 33 years, and the couple had several children together. On the morning of April 29, 1986, Aileen was killed in a car wreck. At approximately 10:40 a.m., a burning car was discovered on a remote bridge on a rural dirt road. It had crashed into a guardrail, and the heat was so intense that the vehicle actually melted into the guardrail after it crashed into it. Aileen's body was discovered inside, but it was burned beyond recognition, so a computer check had to be performed on the vehicle to even figure out who the victim was. Now, at first there doesn't seem to be anything mysterious about the situation, and Aileen's death is simply classified as a tragic accident by the authorities. But the case ends up taking a really bizarre turn when Aileen's husband returns home that same day. Now, before I get into any details here, I just have to say that the reenactment from the Unsolved Mystery segment where Pat Conway returns home, it's absolutely phenomenal. If you should somehow get the opportunity to track down and watch the original segment, I'd highly recommend it because I don't think my own description of the scene can do it justice because, try as I might, I am no Robert Stack. I just love watching it because the eerie music, the editing, the camera work, and Robert Stack's narration just make the whole reenactment creepy as hell, and after watching it, you can see why Unsolved Mysteries was picked up and became so popular. Because when the production team was on its game, there was nothing scarier than Unsolved Mysteries. Anyway, as far as I know, Aileen was supposed to be spending the day alone at home. I checked, and April 29th, 1986 took place on a Tuesday, so I have to assume that her husband was out at work and her children were at school that day. Well, when Pat Conway returns home a few hours after his wife's death, he makes some very strange discoveries. For starters, the patio door has been left open, Aileen has left her purse behind at the house, and her driver's license and her glasses are still inside. But the really strange thing is that Aileen seemed to be in the midst of some serious multitasking before she left the house. Because water from a garden hose is running into the backyard swimming pool, she has set up an ironing board and left the iron turned on, and the bathtub is full of water. And even stranger, the telephone is resting on the bathtub and its receiver is off the hook. But what really concerns Pat is the location where Aileen is found, because her vehicle is discovered 15 miles away from their home, and neither she nor anyone else from the Conway family had ever been in the area, and there's really no reason for her to be traveling alone on this rural dirt road in the middle of nowhere. So, let's just assume Aileen's death was just an accident. That would mean that she would have been in the midst of simultaneously filling the pool, filling the bathtub, and then doing some ironing, before she makes the spontaneous decision to drive away from the house while leaving the patio door open and her purse behind, and she decides to drive 15 miles and wind up on some random bridge in the middle of nowhere before she is killed in a car wreck. Now, obviously, this scenario does not make a whole lot of sense, and Pat Conway agrees. So what he does is consults an investigator from the local district attorney's office, and they go out to the accident scene to perform a search. Approximately 200 meters away from the bridge, Pat and the investigator just happen to find a church bulletin, and Pat actually recognizes it. He believes it is the same church bulletin that was sitting on the dashboard inside Aileen's car. So this prompts the investigator to dream up a theory. What if an unknown assailant abducted Aileen from her home, used her vehicle to drive out to this isolated area, stopped the vehicle, and then rigged the accelerator to drive the car over the bridge with Aileen's body still inside? However, the vehicle only ends up crashing into the guardrail, so then the perpetrator decides to douse the car with an accelerant like gasoline and set it on fire to cover their tracks. And on the surface, that actually sounds like a pretty plausible theory, because it seems very unlikely that a simple accident could have caused the vehicle to burn as badly as it did, because, like I said earlier, Aileen's body was burned beyond recognition. So they decide to perform some burn tests on a car containing the same type of flame retardant material that was used in Aileen's vehicle. And they try it at first without an accelerant, and the fire just winds up burning itself out within a matter of seconds. However, when the material is doused with gasoline, and they perform the same test, this causes the material to go up in flames. This whole test lends credence to the theory that arson might have been involved, and there's also another compelling piece of evidence. It's also worth noting that when Aileen's vehicle was found, the gas cap was actually missing, and taken together, all this evidence seems to suggest that arson may have been involved here. So after this new investigation is performed, Pat is able to convince the local district attorney to change Aileen's cause of death from accidental to unexplained, but unfortunately there still isn't enough hard evidence to conclusively rule her death as a homicide. And sadly, that's about the end of this story, because even after this case aired on Unsolved Mysteries, I don't think there were any other viable leads that ever surfaced, and as far as I know, in the past 30 years, there have been no other major developments to help figure out what actually happened here. So I guess all we can really do now is suggest some possible theories. Now, before I get started here, I think I should deliver a little shout out to the Sitcoms Online message board, which I am a frequent visitor to, because it has its own Unsolved Mysteries forum, and the forum, it contains thousands of threads devoted to Unsolved Mysteries cases. I've actually been a poster there for several years now and have gotten involved in quite a few discussions. And I can tell you that the Aileen Conway case is definitely one of the most heavily discussed topics in that forum. The thing I find particularly fascinating about this case is that it's virtually impossible to form an airtight theory about what might have happened. I've seen some posters at that message board come up with some pretty strong theories, but no matter how good they are, every single one of them is going to have at least one or two major holes. No matter what theory you dream up, nothing about this case makes complete sense. I suppose I should provide a disclaimer here and remind you all that all the information you hear from this point on are my own personal theories, and they should not be treated as fact. Like I said earlier, the only source for this case is the original Unsolved Mysteries segment, so I am simply working with the information I have. Okay, so my first theory is that Aileen Conway was the victim of foul play. Now, in every case like this, it's only natural to start with the spouse and treat him as the number one suspect. So, I'm just going to look at the possibility that maybe Pat Conway was responsible for his wife's death. And if that was true, that would help explain a lot of the holes in this story, but I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. I find that theory highly unlikely. The Unsolved Mystery segment never gives any indication that Pat was ever considered a suspect, so I can only assume that he probably had an alibi that day and was cleared by the authorities relatively quickly. And the most important thing in the husband's favor was that Aileen's death was initially declared an accident, and it was Pat who lobbied so hard to get the investigation reopened. So if Pat murdered his wife, why would he go out there screaming foul play and pushing to get his wife's death exposure on a national television show? If Pat was guilty, he'd essentially gotten away with the perfect crime, so why put your crime into the spotlight again? So yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that Pat was not involved, so I'm just going to move on and speculate on who else might have been responsible. Now, near the end of the segment, there's a statement from one of the investigators who says that there had been some reports of burglaries in the neighborhood prior to Aileen's death. But unfortunately, they don't go into any more details about this or mention if anything was taken or missing from the Conway home. But let's just operate under the assumption that Aileen was murdered during an attempted burglary. Maybe the reason the phone was off the hook was because Aileen was making an attempt to call for help before she was subdued by her attacker. But my main problem with this theory is that these burglars sure went to an awful lot of trouble to cover up their crime. Instead of simply killing Aileen at the house and fleeing the scene, they decide to take both her and her car to a remote bridge 15 miles away, crash the vehicle in an attempt to make it look like an accident, and then use some sort of accelerant to burn it. And another problem with the burglary theory is that the flaming car was discovered at 10:40 a.m., and I just don't know how common it is for burglaries to take place in a suburban neighborhood that early in the morning. Of course, it's possible there was no burglary and Aileen was killed by some random predator or something who broke into her house. But let's look at the time frame here. Assuming that Aileen's family left her alone at, say, 8 or 9 o'clock that morning, that leaves a pretty limited window of time for this crime to have been staged. We're only talking like maybe 2.5 hours here. And as compelling as this whole staged accident theory is, there is still one major piece of evidence that I haven't even mentioned yet, which I think kind of throws the whole theory for a loop. And that's skid marks. Yes, the authorities found some skid marks at the scene which seemed to indicate that Aileen's vehicle was traveling between 50 to 60 miles per hour before the vehicle crashed. Now, the main reason Pat and the investigator latched onto this whole staged accident theory was because of the church bulletin they found 200 meters away from the crash. Their theory was that the vehicle had been stopped at that location, and the bulletin just happened to fall out. But here's the thing, I think that bulletin might be nothing more than a red herring. I am not 100% convinced that it was actually the same bulletin from Aileen's car. I think a lot of bulletins were probably handed out by that particular church, so unless there were any distinguishing characteristics to indicate this particular bulletin belonged to Aileen, I think it might just be a coincidence that they happened to find it there. And really, 200 meters is not that far a distance. I just don't think the perpetrators would have been able to rev up the vehicle to 50 or 60 miles per hour in the amount of distance they had between the bridge and where the bulletin was found. So here's another theory. What if an intruder surprised Aileen at home, so she decided to climb into her car and flee the scene? The intruder could have chased her for a while until Aileen just happened to get into a fatal wreck by crashing into the guardrail. The perpetrator then decides to douse the car with gasoline in order to destroy any potential evidence. But here's the problem with that. If Aileen was trying to escape, why would she drive 15 miles out into the middle of nowhere? Because Lawton, Oklahoma is not that small a town. I looked it up, and during the 1980s, the place had a population of about 80,000 or so. From what I could see in the Unsolved Mysteries segment, Aileen's home was not located in a remote area and was actually in a suburban neighborhood, so surely she would have been able to go to a neighbor or somewhere else for help instead of driving out onto an isolated country road. So I'm going to go into another direction here. Let's just say there were no burglars, there were no intruders, and there was no foul play involved at all. What if Aileen simply did leave the house on her own accord and died in a tragic accident? Yes, we still don't know why she decided to go out to that particular location, but who knows? Maybe she had some sort of secret double life her family didn't even know about. Maybe she was having an affair with some unknown person who lived out in that area. But if Aileen left on her own, that still doesn't explain why her house was in the state that it was in. Why would she leave the patio door open, leave the garden hose running, leave a bathtub full of water, and also leave the iron turned on? That last part is a real kicker for me, because just leaving an iron lying around, that could be potentially dangerous. That could cause the house to burn down. And there's still no explanation for why Aileen would leave her purse and her glasses behind at the house. Now, we have talked about the phone being off the hook, but I actually think that opens up another very intriguing possibility. We were under the impression that Aileen was in the midst of trying to make a call or possibly calling for help, but what if Aileen actually received a call and was told something which prompted her to rush out of the house? If she was told that, say, there was a family emergency or that one of her children were in trouble or something, that would be the type of thing that might compel her to leave in such a hurry. Now, this is another area where the unsolved mystery segment is frustratingly vague, because they leave out a key piece of information. They never mention if phone records were checked at the Conway home. I have no idea if Aileen made or received any calls that morning. If someone did call Aileen that morning, why wouldn't they have come forward? Unless, of course, they had something to hide. So I'm not ruling out the possibility that somebody could have phoned Aileen, fed her some false information, and lured her out to the location where she was ultimately killed. But that leaves another intriguing possibility. What if Aileen suffered some sort of medical problem or an undiagnosed mental breakdown? It's certainly possible she could have suffered a stroke or something and attempted to drive herself to a hospital, but again, it still doesn't explain why she would have driven out into the middle of nowhere, because surely there must have been a hospital somewhere within that 15-mile radius, unless, of course, Aileen got lost. And really, it's not out of the question that she could have become disoriented and confused that day. That might explain why she felt this strange urge to iron, fill up the pool, and fill up the bathtub at the same time. Maybe, for reasons we'll never understand, she was in the midst of doing a bunch of household chores when she suddenly felt compelled to take the phone off the hook, leave the house without her purse, and then just drive out into some unfamiliar area before she got into a tragic car accident and died. In fact, I can't even rule out the possibility that she might have been feeling suicidal and crashed her vehicle into the guardrail on purpose. But admittedly, that is a very unlikely way to kill yourself, and the presence of skid marks at the scene would seem to rule out the possibility of it being a deliberate crash, unless she decided to change her mind at the last second or something. Now, I really don't like speculating about Aileen's mental health, because the segment never really tells us a whole lot about her as a person, so I have no idea if she had any personal problems or any medical problems or mental illness. But I will say that an unsolved mysteries case about a mentally ill woman staging an elaborate suicide, it's not unprecedented. Around the same time period, the show did a missing person segment on a woman named Gail Delano, a divorced mother of two who disappeared from her hometown in Maine. Now, the evidence seemed to suggest that she had been abducted after going out on a blind date with an unidentified man, and her family feared the worst. They feared foul play. However, when the case aired, a medical examiner actually called the tip line because he recognized Gail. He recognized her as an unidentified woman who committed suicide in a hotel room in Mobile, Alabama. Because it turned out that Gail had actually staged her own disappearance, and she had gone to the trouble of hopping on a plane and flying to a completely different state before she checked into a hotel and took her own life. And she ended up remaining an unidentified Jane Doe for 2 years while her family had no idea where she was. On the surface, Gail Delano's actions do not make a whole lot of sense, but she was clearly suffering from some sort of mental illness, and that's the thing. The actions of a mentally ill person often do not make any sense. If Aileen Conway was a mentally ill woman who took her own life, that would explain why an awful lot about this case doesn't make any sense. But like I said before, since I don't know too much about Aileen's personal life, I really don't want to speculate on her mental health, so this is all just conjecture. Like I said at the outset, every theory you dream up for this case is going to have some holes in it. And ultimately, even though I think there is some compelling evidence to suggest that Aileen got into an accident and that there was no foul play involved, I still have a hard time believing that the vehicle could have burned that badly unless someone used an accelerant of some sort. So in the end, I have to believe that there was foul play involved. I believe that someone else had to have been at that scene in order to set that car on fire. The brutal nature of Aileen's death makes me wonder if it was someone with a major vendetta against her or her family, but I have no idea who that could be. And sadly, unless someone were to come out of the woodwork after all these years and make a confession, I don't think we'll ever learn the full truth about what happened to Aileen Conway. So I guess the trail went cold. But, like the late, great Robert Stack used to say, if you have any information about this case, or you think you can help solve this mystery, please contact your local law enforcement agency. And if you have your own theory about what might have happened to Aileen Conway, I would love to hear from you. Hell, if you have any personal knowledge about this case, or you have any new information you can provide which wasn't covered on Unsolved Mysteries or on this podcast, feel free to leave a comment or send me an email. I can be reached at robinwarder@primus.ca. That's robin.warder@primus.ca. So once more, that's robinwarder@primus.ca. Hopefully, there will be more episodes to come of The Trail Went Cold, but until then, you can check out my other true crime and mystery articles at both crack.com and listverse.com. And of course, I have plenty of other content, mostly not related to true crime, but it's available here at The Back Row. So that's it for this episode. Join me next time for another edition of The Trail Went Cold.
The Trail Went Cold is part of the Back Row Podcast Network. Visit the-back-row.com for more. The theme song was composed by Vince Nitro. Thank you.